Welcome to Books, Stories, People with me, Nancy Richards. On April the 18th, 2021, a fire swept across the front slopes of Table Mountain, scorching hectares of vegetation. Fanned by the wind, it reached round to Rhodes Memorial before throwing flames over the University of Cape Town's campus and landing on the roof of the revered Jagger Library. Built in the 1930s and named after benefactor John William Jagger, the library had since become the reading room and home of special collections, including African studies. Well, in the weeks that followed, over 2,000 volunteers helped shift and save books from the devastation caused by the fire. Looking down over the building's charred remains, Principal Librarian of Published Collections, Mandy Noble, shares the story.
Well, the Jagger Library was the original library built on the University of Cape Town upper campus when the library opened. I'm not sure the exact date when that was built, but it is a heritage site, so it was quite old. And it was the original library. And then I think over the course of time, obviously the library grew. And I think what so many of the volunteers who've come and what I myself remember of the Jagger Library was that was where the card catalogues were, and you used to go down into the basements to the short loan and the photocopy machine. So that was in sort of the 70s, 80s. And it's the late 1990s, 2000, the whole library was redesigned. And we now have the Chancellor Oppenheimer Library. And the building that was the Jagger Library, the original building, just became known as the J.W. Jagger Building. African Studies, the African Studies Collection and African Studies has a checkered history across the campus and being in various different sites. But I'm not sure when the decision was made. And then it was decided that it would move into the Jagger Building. The Jagger Building was refurbished to its original state. And it really was a beautiful, beautiful building. And then the African Studies Collection and Rare Books merged with Manuscripts and Archives to form what we now know as Special Collections. And that must have happened round about in the early 2000s. I only actually became part of the Special Collections team in 2018. I had another role up until then. So my history is a little bit checkered about the actual history of Special Collections, but that's what I can recall. So the basement areas became storage areas largely for manuscripts and for our rare and antiquarian books. The bulk of the African Studies collection was housed in the reading room. They were in lovely wooden bookcases down the side and above where in the galleries where the staff had their little alcoves or offices, there were more African Studies books. Unfortunately, those were all destroyed. But it was the bulk of the African Studies collection. But very fortunately, we were able to save little pockets of areas where books were stored. We were able to save those. So all was not lost in terms of the African Studies collection. But there was also, apart from the African Studies collection, we all had a wonderful, huge collection of government publications. And that, unfortunately, was also lost in the fire. We have quite a large map collection that was saved. And we had a lovely African DVD collection, DVDs relating to Africa, many of which we were the only library in the world that had them. And unfortunately, that was also destroyed.
As you talk about the Africa collection, actually, as you talk about these lovely wooden shelves, and I'm thinking they would have been a tinderbox waiting to be burned.
Absolutely.
But as you talk about the Africa collection, it means that it was important beyond the boundaries of Cape Town and UCT. It had such value for all Africa.
Mm. It did. And a little gem within the African Studies collection was our pamphlet collection. I call it a little gem. It was huge. And a lot of that was unique material. Unfortunately, that was saved because it was down in the basement. So that's unique. But as you say, we had researchers coming from all over the world to use our African Studies collection because, and it wasn't just related to Southern Africa. We were a large collection of West and North and East Africa as well. We started, I suppose, in the last 20 years, really building an African collection rather than a Southern African collection.
Just put it in context of the lay people amongst us who don't know so much about academic studies, but you know, the Africa collection sounds very important and very valuable, but the little gem of the pamphlet collection sounds very accessible. And I'm sort of immediately thinking political pamphlets, I don't know what they were, but what were the other contents? What sort of other actual groups of collections were within that?
So the pamphlet collection was largely a lot of political, we call it political ephemera, political pamphlets, things that people people might have picked up going to a political meeting or produced by a particular political party, different organisation. A lot of that is also conference papers, single conference papers that were maybe not published anywhere else. A lot of that has also been donated by sort of leading figures. So it really was a little gem, but that has survived. So within the African Studies, the book collection, we focused very much on, I suppose you would say, the humanities. So we had a vast collection of books on political science, political studies, social development, African languages, African literature. History, of course, was one of our huge focus collections. But we did have a lot of unique materials that no other library certainly in South Africa or in Africa had. So we were used a lot by international researchers and researchers from the rest of South Africa as well.
As one of the people lucky enough to have done a little bit of volunteering of shifting the books out from the burnt building, it was fascinating, although there wasn't much time to peruse the books in the boxes, but it was fascinating to see what was coming out. There was everything from Antarctica to Alice in Wonderland. I kept thinking, what are all these books doing here? Are those donations? I mean, how had the library acquired them in the first place?
So you were referring to what we called our rare and antiquarian book collection, which is a vast collection that was started by one of the librarians, one of the early head librarians, I think was Immelman, who started a rare and antiquarian book collection. So that was divided up into a number of sub-collections, one of which was what would generally be described as rare or antiquarian books. And they were books that were bought because of their beautiful bindings or because they're just beautiful objects, but also because of their content. And one of those wonderful collections was a collection of books with four-edge paintings, which is a very unique thing that was done in the early printing days when if you folded a book back, the pages of a book back, there was beautiful paintings, beautiful drawings on that. Then we also had, I think you were referring to Alice in Wonderland books, a book on historical children's literature, which was also books that are collected because they are wonderful books, they're unique. Some of those were first editions. And then we also had a very large collection, which we've been building quite a lot on South African children's literature. And in recent years, it's been wonderful to be able to buy a copy of the book, the same book in all 11 languages. So we were collecting a lot of those as well. And I suppose about 20 or so years ago, 15 years ago, we were donated a set of books on Antarctica. That's the Antarctic collection that you would have helped save. And they were wonderful as well. And that of course, is a growing collection as well with modern books. So the original collection had a lot of the old books, Ernest Shackleton, all the different explorers going into Antarctica.
And those were just a couple of books that I happened to see. And it also told us something of a story of technology because there were a lot of newspapers coming and going, big piles, and also little boxes of microfiche of the Cape Times dating back to 1907. So was there a lot of that? Had a lot been digitized?
Well, we were able to buy the Cape Times and the Argus. The National Library had a project to put all those on microfilm. I'm not sure what the close date was, so we had that on microfilm, which fortunately has been saved. And that was also very heavily used because people do a lot of research in newspapers. Newspapers can offer a very specific angle to research. But unfortunately, the microfilm readers were destroyed because they were in the reading room. But, I mean, that can be replaced. And we did collect newspapers. People often asked us, why are we still buying the Cape Times, the Argus, the Mail and Guardian, the Sunday Times? Why are we still getting those in print? But surprisingly, students, particularly film and media students, they like to see the newspaper. And it's important for their research to actually see the context in which an article has been published or an advert. So, yes, we had a large collection of newspapers. And we were very surprised to see that they had actually survived the fire. They were in an area where they didn't. And because of COVID last year, we hadn't shelved. When we reopened in December last year with a limited service, we unpacked all those newspapers and they were still in the library. Normally they would have been moved to an off-site store. So we were very fortunate that those newspapers survived.
I suppose the issue here is how much was there, how much was lost, and how much was saved. Have you any idea?
Well, I think we probably had about between 75 and 80,000 volumes in the African Studies collection. And we were able to save our art and architecture books, our literature books, and history books. So those titles were shelved in pockets that were not in the reading room. And surprisingly, when we actually got access to them, we found, wow, you know, these have survived. A lot of them have been damaged by water because the building was flooded. I mean, it was water bombed repeatedly. So we have lost a number of some of those to water damage. But you would have seen the tents on University Avenue where they're doing triage and conservation. So some of those were, we had to discard because they were beyond salvaging and can be replaced, unlike the manuscript collections and the rare book collections. So a lot of those we can replace, as we will also start rebuilding the collections that and the subject areas that were lost. We're going to have a concerted effort, obviously, to rebuild that. It's difficult to say how much of that was lost, but I'd say that the bulk of about 60% of the African Studies collection was lost.
And I think there was a firewall. This has been much talked about, the firewall that protected some. Where was and what was the firewall and how did it work?
That's a loaded question. There wasn't actually a firewall. There was a firewall that came down. There was a firewall between the Jagger building and the Chancellor Oppenheimer building. So that came down. There was a glass door going down ramps into the basement areas, and that seemed to stop the fire. Unfortunately, there was nothing beyond that glass door for the fire to feed on. So it would have been wonderful if we'd had these wonderful fire doors that suddenly came down, but they didn't. So which is why the reading room went up. And as you said, I mean, there was just so much for the fire to feed on in there.
I guess there's been a lot of lessons all round, and I'm sure fire experts have been crowding round to find out what happened and what might not have had to happen, you know, had things been differently organised. But just before we move on to the collections, I think the social media has been awash with people saying, mourning their particular collections. Was there a lot of individual theses here, a lot of people's work here?
No, the theses, a large proportion of our theses have been digitised, but we call them the archival, the backup copy of print theses that was held in an off-site store. I think what you're referring to are the manuscript collections. So people over time and families over the course of time would have given us their papers, you know, sort of my father was, you know, a famous politician or whatever. I would like UCT to have his papers. So that's what we refer to as primary material. And that was all kept in the manuscript collection. And I think that's what people are very concerned about, what happened to their individual collections. Some of those collections were very valuable, and obviously they're incredibly important to the families of the people who donated the material. So, and that is what I think we were referring to when we said we're not giving out individual details at the moment. So a lot of people have asked, and we just say, well, and I mean, we are still sort of assessing what was saved, what was lost. So we will be making an announcement, but I think the idea is also to let the families know before we make a general announcement.
I guess you're still dealing with the patients in ICU, as it were, the triage.
Yes. The
other thing that has come flooding forward are people's memories of having worked in the Jagger Library, which, you know, people's memories of how beautiful it was. Tell me a little bit of some of those memories. How beautiful was it?
It was a very beautiful building. It looked to me like, you know, I'd like to say a proper library. You know, it was used in film shoots. We had a number of requests to use the reading room in film shoots because I think it looked like the traditional library. And it had been beautifully restored. So the mosaics in the foyer were restored and they survived. We had lovely antique furniture. Most of that survived because it was not actually in the reading room. It was outside. And it was a pleasure to come to work every day and, you know, walk into that building and go and sit amongst the books. And then also to look down from, because the staff sat sort of in galleries above the reading room and look down and see people working quietly away, looking at anything from architectural drawings, maps, books, pamphlets, the manuscript collections. And I think what has also been very gratifying is that a number of our ex-colleagues, people who've retired, did come back, have been on site either to help with conservation or to help with rescuing the books and moving them out. And they have shared their memories with us. Yep. So it has been amazing.
Yes. Mm. And aside from the students who would have come to the Jagat Library, there would have been people who've come from presumably all over Africa to look at this collection.
Yes, and all over the world. I mean, we've had people from the United States, from Denmark, Norway, the United Kingdom. People do come in from all over the world to look at our collections, yeah.
So there's international mourning, I suppose, for this library. One thing I haven't asked is, we keep talking about the Jagat Library. Who was Mr. Jagat?
I'm showing my ignorance. I think he was one of the first librarian.
Okay.
Of UCT libraries. I might be wrong. Maybe you could check that fact, but I think that's he was. Well,
I'm sure his spirit is up there looking down on all of this.
And we did find us in one of the rooms when we were doing the salvaging, we'd found J.W. Jagat's bust. So we have that.
So definitely there in spirit, more than in spirit.
Yeah.
So we've dealt with the Jagat Library as it was. The issue was how to deal with it. I think the whole of Cape Town collectively held their breath when they saw flames bursting out of the top of the Jagat Library. What was the first port of call? Who got the first phone call? What happened?
I think our library facilities team, Blythe Edwards and Steve Spigler, I think they maybe got the first call. But from where I lived, we were watching the fire like all day and it just came round. And then I presume they would have got in touch with Ujala Satko, executive director, and Reggie Raju and Nikki Krauss, the directors. I know they were on site on that dreadful Sunday afternoon, but we got WhatsApps. As sort of, and the management team was sort of, you know, so WhatsApp from Steve or Blythe saying, you know, the main library's fine, but special collections isn't. And that's when sort of the reality hit. And then, of course, the photographs started coming through.
And the difficulty was that, as you say, the fire had literally crept around the mountains. So the fire department had their work cut out for them, and the helicopters. So they were dealing with the whole mountain.
Yes.
And all sorts of other very iconic buildings that were under threat.
Mm.
So with the fire team here on site very quickly, did they manage to contain it? I don't know if you saw any of that.
No, I don't know if they were on site, but I know they were definitely on site. But they were also commenting to a colleague of mine that the fire was actually so hot that the water from the hoses was just evaporating. So I think it was the helicopters. We just got such appreciation for the pilots, for the firefighters who were on site and who did their utmost to contain the fire. But it was just one of those dreadful, dreadful things.
I imagine it must have been devastating for you all to come up, and once the fire was finally out, I can't remember what date it was, but once the fire was finally out, it must have been devastating for you all to come and see the damage. Mm. How did you even begin?
Well, we got access. The fire was on the Sunday, and we were told we could come on site on the following Tuesday. I came up on the Wednesday. I think in some ways it was almost cathartic to see it, because, you know, you see the pictures. But when I came up on Tuesday, I mean, there was a building team already here. We had a project manager in place. So you could already see, you know, that things were starting to happen, and things were, you know, people who went on a Tuesday will also say, you know, well, this collection is fine. The basements were fine, apart from severe water damage. So it was cathartic in a way to come up and to be up here, and then to be able to actually get in there and start doing something. And I think we all felt, once we were able to maybe just get in there and move a few pamphlet boxes out, a few manuscript boxes out, a few books out, it kind of became a very cathartic thing. And I know members of my team have said, you know, it was far better to be up here and in the basements at all hours of the day and night doing something than sitting at home crying over what was lost. So
there must have been some very hard decisions to be made about what was salvageable and what it was just not going to happen. I remember watching somebody with a whole pile of prints, and it were all sort of burned around the edges. They looked really quite picturesque, but I thought they've got to go. I'm not sure how those decisions were made.
Well, it's been surprising actually what conservators can save. It's been quite an eye-opener, and I think we have made every effort to save what can be saved, particularly in our unique materials, materials that can't be easily replaced. So with some of the books, they're modern books, you know, we will be able to replace them. So if they were very, very badly water damaged, you have to weigh the cost of salvage against the cost of replacing. And of course, triage was inundated. So we did make decisions, and they were hard decisions. No librarian ever wants to discard a book. They become very close to our heart. And one of the things that was unique about the African Studies collection, in fact, all the collections and special collections, is that we never weeded anything. We never threw anything away. So we would have books written sort of from the 1930s. You know, so everything was there. We don't, so as special collections librarians, we never throw anything away. So it was, they were very hard decisions, but they always have to be balanced against what can be replaced. And we've had offers from people all around the world saying, please just let us know. I have a collection of African studies books. You know, I'm prepared to donate. But our unique materials like prints, manuscripts, every effort has been made to save them. And it's been really quite strange. So something that can be blackened on the outside, when you actually open it up, it's fine. So we haven't really made a decision to throw anything out that we don't feel can be replaced.
Gosh.
And as I said, the conservators are amazing, what they can and what they have done.
Well, let's talk about the conservation, because I think, you know, the volunteers were there like a human chain moving the library, all the books out, those that could be saved. Where did they go, by the way?
So the books that were dry and fine, no water damage, no mold, nothing on them, we've put them in various sites on campus, ready to be moved to wherever our next location. So they were all taken to various sites where they have now been shelved or kept in crates. Then the books that needed triage or were wet, moldy, they went straight to the tents where they were treated. And once they've been treated and are now deemed okay, they've gone into a room again to wait where we're going to move to.
This idea of the triage tent, I have an image of people taking the vitals of every particular book and finding out how it's getting on. But how did they get treated? I mean, how do you treat a book that's been either burned or very badly water damaged? What's the treatment?
I'm not a conservator, but what I have seen is books that are very badly water damaged, were wrapped in cling wrap and put into cold storage. I think if they had mold, they were sprayed with ethyl alcohol, which I think would kill the mold. And they've been in a cold storage unit on University Avenue. And I do know that with our rare books, we have yesterday, unwrapped a lot of those. And they're now in one of the other big containers, which is called the drying room. So they're just being left almost to air dry. And there are dehumidifiers in there to keep the air circulating. So those are books that would have been very badly water damaged. Yes, I think you'll have to speak to a conservator, I'm afraid. I don't know. So, yeah.
But there was a great deal of activity there.
There was, yeah.
But looking at the campus, there are badly burned trees and, you know, there's evidence of the ravages of fire all around. And yet, strangely, it looks very calm and it looks like this too can be saved. What's the destiny of the building itself? Because the shell remains. Is it to be restored?
I don't know. We haven't really spoken to anybody about that yet. So I don't know. I imagine the shell, I mean, as you say, the shell is still standing. It is, I think, structurally safe, structurally sound still. So I really don't know. I think that'll become more evident in the weeks to come.
Yeah. But there has been a lot of interest from libraries all over the world, because I'm sure they can all relate. I remember some years ago there was a terrible fire at Glasgow School of Art in their library, which was, you know, irreplaceable things. But I think there's been some interest from UNESCO, who came to visit.
Yes, I'm afraid I don't know all the details, but representatives from UNESCO did come and had a look at the site. And I think we're very impressed by what we had managed to achieve in such a short time since the fire, because it has only been a month today.
Yes. So. And I think Table Mountain itself is a UNESCO heritage site,
yes,
is it not?
Yes. And we did have some heritage, we did have some UNESCO collections as well, so particularly amongst the manuscript collections. So
what now? I imagine cataloguing, re-cataloguing, I imagine there's still quite a lot of work to do. How's it going?
There's an enormous amount of work still to be done, as you say, on the catalogue, on the system, so people will know. I've been, because one of my roles is sort of to oversee cataloguing with the new CT libraries. I used to be manager of the cataloguing department. So we will have to obviously go through the system. Fortunately, a lot of it can be done programmatically. So I have meetings to be set up within the next few days with the head of acquisitions and our systems librarian to start talking through what we have to do, what we can do. But there is an enormous, enormous amount of work.
What lessons have been learned?
To have a purpose-built area, to have, you know, to store your special collections in areas that are with these wonderful fire doors, you know. So I think those are some of the lessons. I don't really want to elaborate. It was a tragedy. It was a disaster. Nobody could have foreseen it. And I think, you know, people say, you know, if we'd had gas suppression, things like that. But it's my understanding, I mean, the fire caught in the roof. And there's very little that anybody can do. And then, of course, a large part of the damage was also water damage, which, you know, people had to use water to get the fire out. So otherwise, you know, the devastation on campus would have been huge. So.
And personal, perhaps not lessons for you, but memories. I mean, as a librarian, you said that one becomes very attached to all the books. Was there any moment of real personal mourning for any particular book or collections?
I think for the African Studies collection, the books that we did lose, it was a magnificent collection. And also I think we had 3,500 DVDs, which were fascinating. It was an amazing collection. So I think for me, losing those DVDs. And
What were they of?
African stories. We had television series, African television series. So we had an amazing librarian, Bev Angus, and it was started through Octorop, who is now retired, and Bev Angus. They built up this collection, and they bought DVDs relating to Africa, to anything relating to Africa. So we had a lot of Bollywood movies. We had just started collecting these wonderful, they were called B-rated movies that were made sort of under apartheid to promote the African film industry. So Bev used to scour the internet and go to great lengths with the acquisitions department to find these gems, these wonderful, wonderful films. And there were some amazing ones. And during COVID, Bev and her team spent a huge amount of time looking at the videos and writing synopses for them. And then making sure that they were on the catalogue for people to find. And they had made a huge, huge effort last year. And now, of course, so for me, I think for me that is a huge loss. And I think for Bev as well, she's retiring this year, so I think for her it was very devastating.
There's a Latin phrase which is ex Africa, semper, something. What it means is out of Africa always comes something new.
Yes.
And one hopes perhaps that's the case here.
Yes, we will rebuild the collection and we will rebuild the building in whatever form is decided. But we will rebuild the collection and we'll do our utmost to start rebuilding the DVD collection and all the collections that were lost. And something good will come of it. Something better will come.
Very lastly, what's been the students' response?
We had huge response from student volunteers. It was absolutely wonderful to see the students coming out. Because I think, I mean, with COVID last year, a lot of the first-year students wouldn't have known anything about the special collections or the Jagger building. But, yeah, we had tremendous support from the students. From all faculties, all different. I was talking to one of the students. He was a master's in astrophysics. So I said, why? He says, no, you just can't see books. You know, you just have to do your bit to try and save something. So the support from the students has been fantastic. Academics as well have volunteered. We had emeritus professors coming up to help us.
Fantastic.
It's been wonderful.
Nandi, thank you very much. And I wish you every strength. And hopefully there will be some phoenix out of these ashes.
Yes, we hope so. Watch the space, I suppose, and see what we do next. Yeah.